Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the press conference for the new Civil Rights Project report titled Diversity in the Distance, the Onset of Racial Change in the Northern New England Schools. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded September 24th, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to Professor Gary Orfield, co-director of the UCLA Civil Rights Project, and Jennifer Askew, lead author of the report. Please go ahead, Professor Orfield.
Thank you very much. This is the 8th of 13 reports we're doing on segregation and racial change issues across the eastern coast of the United States. And we are today releasing statistics on Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, areas that have the least diversity in this region that we're studying, from Maine down through North Carolina. We are the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. The Civil Rights Project was founded 17 years ago at Harvard University and moved to UCLA in 2007. It is a nonpartisan research center which is dedicated to getting the highest quality research on issues of racial change and inequality in the society and providing basic information for the next generation of civil rights in the United States. We have commissioned over 500 studies. Our events have led to the creation of almost 20 books. We are a network of researchers from across the country. This project is part of our ongoing studies of school desegregation. Throughout the history of the Civil Rights Project, and even before that in the Harvard Project on school desegregation, we've been the authoritative source of basic statistics on issues of segregation in American schools, putting out many reports, including our Brown at 60 report that kind of assessed the changes that have taken place over the 60 years since the Brown decision found segregation in Southern schools to be unconstitutional. What we're seeing across the country is an increase in racial segregation, both for African Americans and for Latinos, who are now the largest minority population in the country. And we're seeing a tremendous change in American schools, which are now in the first year of having a majority of non-white children nationally. This is happening in metropolitan areas all over the country, not just in the cities, but in the suburbs. The suburban rings of our largest metropolitan areas now are half non-white in terms of school enrollment. The basic dynamics of the American population are being driven by a decline in white students that's been substantial, a significant but gradual increase of black students, but a very rapid increase of Latino and Asian students in the country. For years now, the white population in the country has not been reproducing itself. And the dynamics of population change across New England are basically driven by an increase in Latino and Asian immigration. So we have to think of, even in areas where it's never been an issue, we have to think about issues of diversity and what we can do to manage it and whether or not we want to avoid segregation by race and class. What we see in the country is that usually our segregation is by both race and poverty. Usually, if you have neighborhood schools and segregated neighborhoods, white children and Asian children get middle-class schools, and almost always the concentrated poverty of black and Latino students is related to concentrated poverty as well. So that double segregation is related to all forms of educational inequality. Those schools tend to have most turnover, they tend to have teachers that are the least qualified, they tend to have the least challenging courses, they tend to have the lowest graduation rates, and the weakest paths to college. Just the opposite is true for the middle class, white and Asian schools. desegregation has been very important in lowering, not disappearing, but significantly lowering those educational gaps. Students in desegregated schools are likely to score better. They're more likely to graduate. They're significantly more likely to be successful in college. A desegregated experience creates positive benefits in terms of understanding and being ready to live and work together for children of all races. Of course, all of our elite colleges, including all the great colleges in New England, are integrated intentionally. And for students to come from a background of integration makes it easier for them in that adaptation to the college as well as to the later job careers. People from, there's a large migration out of New England into other places for jobs, of course. Once you get down to Massachusetts, you become into a very diverse community, and it becomes more and more diverse as you go down the coast or into any of the great cities of the country. So there's a tremendous advantage to knowing how to live and work successfully in those contexts. So with that as a bit of background, I'm going to turn it over to Jen Askew, who is a leading researcher in this project and has been author previously of a couple of our major reports. So Jen, why don't you lay out the data?
Thanks. So I will spend a few minutes discussing our five main findings, and first just wanted to give you an overview of the major takeaway, which is that even though Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont are still majority white in their school enrollment, the region is becoming more diverse, particularly in the metro areas. So right now, there are no serious problems of segregation, and the issues of segregation that do exist in the area are pretty modest, especially when we compare them to the rest of the nation. Within our report, we have five main findings, which I'm going to discuss, and I'll highlight some key data from each state and metro as I go through the findings. So our first major finding is that the enrollment size is decreasing in all three states. It decreased from 1989 to 2010 in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Decreased by 14% in Maine. In New Hampshire, it increased by 20% from 1989 to 1999, but then decreased by 6%. From 1999 to 2010. And in Vermont, there was an increase in the enrollment size of 11% from 1989 to 1999, but then a decrease by 6%. And even though the enrollment decreased in all three states, within the three major metro areas that we studied, which were Portland, Manchester, Nashua, and Burlington, the enrollment increased in all of those metro areas. Our second main finding is that schools in all three states are becoming more racially diverse and enrolling slightly smaller shares of white students. White students still account for the vast majority of the enrollment in 2010. In Maine, white students were 93% of the enrollment. White students accounted for 90% of enrollment in New Hampshire and 93% in Vermont. But this is still a smaller share than they accounted for 20 years ago, so we are seeing change there. In both Maine and Vermont, black students comprise the next largest share of enrollment at about 2%, and in New Hampshire, Latino students accounted for the second largest share of enrollment at about 4%. Within the major metro areas, we're seeing slightly more diverse enrollments than each of the respective states. So the white share of enrollment in Metro Portland was 91%, 88% in Manchester Nashua, and 88% in Metro Burlington in 2010. Our third main finding is that black and Latino students are exposed to smaller shares of white students than are their white peers. So in 2010, in all three states, the typical white student attended a school that most closely reflected the overall racial composition of the state student enrollment. In Maine and Vermont, the typical black student attended a school with the smallest share of white students. having 77% white peers in Maine and 82% white peers in Vermont, even though white students accounted for 93% of the total enrollment in both of those states. So you could see there's a gap between the portion of white students in the school a typical black student is attending versus the overall state enrollment of white students. In New Hampshire, the typical Latino student was least exposed to white students, attending a school with 76% white peers, even though white students accounted for 90% of the total enrollment in New Hampshire. So this data is showing us that black and Latino students are basically underexposed to white students slightly. Our fourth major finding is that majority-minority schools are beginning to come into existence in the metro areas. In 2010, in Metro Portland and in the Manchester Nashua region, approximately 2% of each of the metro schools were majority-minority, meaning their enrollments were 50 to 100% minority students. So 2% might sound small, and it is, but it's important because in the previous decades, there were no majority-minority schools in Portland, in Metro Portland or the Manchester Nashua region. So this is a change. And this is where we start to be a little bit concerned because neither of these metros or any of the school districts in them have an enrollment that is majority-minority, yet some of the schools are majority-minority, indicating that some of the schools are becoming more racially segregated in those two metro areas. However, this is not an issue in Metro Burlington. There are no majority-minority schools in that metro area. And our fifth and final major finding is that segregation by poverty is occurring alongside these modest increases in segregation by race. So the share of low-income students increased in all three states between 1989 and 2010. In 2010, New Hampshire had the smallest share of low-income students of the three states at 25%. In Vermont, 37% of students were low-income, and Maine had the largest share of low-income students at 43%. In 2010, in Maine and Vermont, the typical black student attended a school with the largest share of low-income peers, having 51% low-income peers in Maine and 45% low-income peers in Vermont. In New Hampshire, it's a little bit different. There, the typical Latino student was exposed to the largest share of low-income peers. That was 39% low-income peers. So black and Latino students are essentially overexposed to low-income students, while white students are underexposed to low-income students. In the two metros that have majority-minority schools, Portland and Manchester-Nashua, the share of low-income students in majority-minority schools was disproportionately large. So in Metro Portland, where 32% of the metro's students were low-income, 76% of students in majority-minority schools were low-income. That's double the overall share of low-income students in the metro. And at an even more extreme level, 85% of students in Manchester Nashua's majority-minority schools were low-income, even though the metro's overall share of low-income students was only 23%. So that's more than triple the share of low-income students in majority-minority schools compared to the metro. So this data is showing us that there's a double segregation of students by race and poverty in these majority-minority schools. So given these findings, what can we do? Well, our report has a lot of recommendations, but I'll just highlight a couple of them today. First, it's essential to proactively create plans for districts so that schools can create and sustain racial diversity as the student population begins changing. For example, districts can consider race and socioeconomic status as two of many factors in developing their student assignment policies. We're also seeing from this data that the metro areas are the areas of the most growth and also where the diversity is increasing more rapidly. So it's likely that new schools will need to be built there. Districts in these metros can use that as an opportunity to promote diversity by making sure that new school sites are in racially and socioeconomically diverse parts of the metro and not in racially isolated areas. And this is also where it's important for education policymakers and school leaders to work with housing policies and make sure they're coordinated in their efforts. In Maine and Vermont, they can use town tuitioning policies to support diversity efforts. Maine and New Hampshire both have charter schools, and so there it's essential to include civil rights standards for charter schools, which would mean making sure charters are conducting outreach to diverse groups of potential students, that they're providing free transportation for students, and also that they're providing services for English learners, students with disabilities, and students who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch. And then finally, it's important to also work with the teachers and administrators. So it's essential to train teachers and administrators in working with more diverse student populations and also to make efforts to recruit a more diverse teaching staff. So again, just to reiterate, what we're finding is increasing diversity in all three states, particularly in the metro areas, where we're also starting to see some very early signs of racial and socioeconomic segregation. But because these problems are still small and localized, right now is the ideal time for these three states and districts to talk about racial diversity and segregation and to plan for the changes that are on the way so that the communities, schools, and students never have to face problems of severe segregation. For additional recommendations and a lot more data and detail, the full report is available on the Civil Rights Project website, and we're also happy to answer any questions. So right now, I'll turn it back over to Kayla for your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You'll hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to register for an audio question or a comment, please press 1-4 on your telephone keypad. And we seem to have no questions on the phone line at this time.
Well, let me just add to this that there are many other reports that relate to these issues on the website of the Civil Rights Project as well. That's civilrightsproject.ucla.edu, and they include reports about such as Why Segregation Matters, our national reports, the reports on individual states along the Eastern Seaboard, and many other related materials, including materials on diversity in college. And we are always available to answer your questions as you explore these materials. If there's no other questions, we'd like to thank you very much for participating on this call this morning.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.